there's an air of vulnerability that comes off you. Why is that?
Say more about that.
Say more about it. Is that one of your fucking psychotherapist questions?
Time passes, the seasons change, and yet here we are, myself and producer Killian sitting back in my car, microphones in hand. Welcome back to Episode with me, Richie Sadler. I am so excited to say we're kicking off the second series today with a very special opening show. Killian, how are you?
I'm brilliant, Richie. It's been a long 4 months. Every time I saw a grey Volkswagen approaching me in the distance, I thought, maybe that's Richie. Maybe he's about to pull over with microphones in his hand. And now the day has arrived.
Yes, it's finally here. And in those few months, actually, since we closed out the first series with that tune in Damien Dempsey's kitchen, I've had loads of lovely messages about the first series and, wait for this, Episode was chosen by the Irish Examiner as their podcast of the year, which was a lovely way to round out the year, and to stick it to Second Captains all in one go. So we really wanted to begin this new series with a big guest, and that's exactly what we're doing today, because we're speaking to former Ireland manager Vera Powell. Now, Vera hasn't given any interviews at all to the media since the week she left the FAI around 7 months ago, so this is going to be the first time anyone has heard from her. Now, myself and Killian flew into Bordeaux Airport last week to do this. We hired a car, and then we drove through the incredibly beautiful French countryside to Vera's house in the Dordogne. As you can probably hear from my voice, I came back with a head cold, but it was a gorgeous backdrop to what we were anticipating beforehand was going to be a pretty heavy chat in parts. Now, if you're a football fan, you're going to know that it was a fairly huge 18 months for Vera. She led the Ireland women's team to the finals of the World Cup last summer, something which nobody had ever achieved. And during the World Cup itself, there was a load of speculation about how she was getting on with the Ireland players and whether the FAI were going to renew her contract when the tournament finished. Now, her contract wasn't renewed in the end. This was decided, according to the FAI, on the back of an internal review it carried out on how everything had gone during and before the World Cup. Player power was a term we read about a lot in the media at the time. People were trying to make sense of the decision. But it's not just her time at Ireland I wanted to speak to her about.
No, because I think, Rich, there's a really essential context to the World Cup and to Vera's time with Ireland coming to an end. Because back in December 2022, a report was published in America by the National Women's Super League and their Players Association, basically, where they laid out the findings of an investigation they'd carried out into alleged misconduct by managers in the States, including Vera, because she had managed the Houston Dash in Texas for about 10 months from November 2017. Now, in terms of the allegations made specifically about Vera, they kind of related to weight shaming of players was the headline one, of her wanting to have control of their diets and exercise regimens, and there was claims as well that she would have bursts of emotional yelling, was the quote from the report. Now, Vera has always strongly denied any suggestion that she would shame a player over their weight. And I think in relation to the other allegations that were being made in that report, people's responses kind of centered around, I think, assumptions that a manager wanting control over a squad's diet and gym plans would be part and parcel of a professional sports setup. And that you could assume that there were going to be moments of high tension in any kind of dressing room in elite sport, which I think you could probably attest to yourself, Rich.
Yeah, but among the many reasons that report would have been particularly difficult for Vera, she was named alongside coaches and club staff that were alleged to have committed serious sexual offences, allegations of an entirely different nature altogether than you were talking about.
Yeah, completely. And Vera herself had only disclosed publicly for the first time that she was the victim of rape and sexual assault in three separate incidents by three different perpetrators while she was a player in the Netherlands. This is going back a couple of decades. Now, when that initial report came out from the Women's Super League, the FAI continued to back Vera. But by our own account, everything changed once an article came out just before Ireland left for the World Cup in Australia last summer, summer of 2023. So The Athletic in America published this report, which had further anonymous allegations by multiple Houston players about weight shaming and a, quote, culture of fear existing at the club, among various other claims. Now, Vera, again, denied all those allegations, but, like, you remember yourself, Rich, because you were covering the tournament 40. It dominated the World Cup build-up chat, just as the players were about to leave for Australia. And it really seemed to trigger a big change, both in the atmosphere in the camp, but also, and this is related, I suppose, how the players themselves related to Vera as their manager.
Yeah, and among all the commentary and the coverage and the responses to Vera's approach or Vera's departure from the FAI, I think it's probably fair to say that the most damning criticism came from one of her own players. I remember Diane Caldwell's comments. She said this, she said, "The results and performances that we have gotten were in spite of Vera being our coach." And when she was asked to elaborate, she said, "I think our preparations for games could have been better, our physical preparation, our opponent analysis, our match tactics, our in-game match tactics, changes, systems of play." Like that's pretty much most of the aspects of football management. So pretty withering stuff from within your own dressing room. Now, Vera does respond to those comments towards the end of the chat you're about to hear. I obviously put them to her. Mm. Now, as you can imagine, a senior player like Diane making those comments, that's stinging about a manager who's just left the job. Like, that made a load of headlines at the time, particularly given that she said them while on Ireland duty in a press conference. And as well as that, the new Ireland manager at the time, Eileen Gleeson, who would have been Vera's right-hand kind of woman for 2 years in the job beforehand, she said Diane was perfectly entitled to her opinions. Mm. And I remember at the time thinking that very much felt like this squad is cutting all ties with Vera and her tenure as manager.
Yeah, and I do wonder, because just how comprehensive those comments were, and they seemed in some way planned from Diane, I wonder how many other players kind of felt the same way. We don't know, but...
Mm. Yeah, sure, we don't know. But I do want to share this one detail also. The chat you're about to hear, this was recorded before Ireland's recent games against France and England in the Euro qualifiers. Vera was adamant, though. She was adamant that we would wait until after those games had been played before putting this out, because she was really keen to avoid any kind of distraction or disruption to the players or the staff during the international window. So let's play for you now. Here is Vera Pauw chatting with me at her kitchen table in her home in France last week.
Okay, we're going to take a left, 200 metres. Uh-huh.
Vera, you are very welcome to Episode. Thank you so much for giving us a reason to visit this gorgeous part of France. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm okay. I'm reasonably okay, yeah.
Myself and yourself have been speaking for quite a while about how this conversation might go. How are you feeling about doing it today?
Not completely comfortable, a bit nervous, but I think it's good to do it because I feel comfortable to speak to you and with you, because I feel that my words will not be interpreted in a way that will harm me. So let's go for it. Let's see where we go.
So you were in the job in the FAI for 4 years, and it's really the last 12 months of that spell that I really want to kind of talk to you about. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, I think, is going to be difficult, some of it's controversial, some of it might be upsetting, but can we start with like what I assume is one of the high points of your entire career? The night Ireland qualified for the World Cup, they beat Scotland 1-0 in Glasgow in October. What are your memories of that night?
My memories are actually going a few days back before that moment that we qualified, because we've had, what was it, three and a half years that we were building and building and building and never did a step back. And on the Thursday night, Austria and Scotland were fighting of who would play us. And the fact that we could skip that first round was already incredible and made our chances higher because we had to do it once instead of twice. And we were watching the game with the whole team, and Scotland came out as the winner. And yeah, we thought that is in our favor because the style of Scotland is, we're more used to that than the style of Austria, the continental style. And it's fantastic to see that the game was the perfect example of preparation, training, getting the teamwork done in that and then executing it. So when everything comes together, and then with all the pressures that I had that year, it was incredible because I felt proud that we had been able to stand all those pressures, that we kept growing. There was not one single game or training session that we went back. Every game, every session was better. The teamwork gave us the win, that the absolute will gave us the win, and the sacrifices that everybody had to do for it. So the moment that final whistle blew, it was as if the incredible... yeah, thing was done. The impossible was made possible. And we always said something is only impossible when it's been proven to be impossible. And that is what I always said. We have to qualify to grow further. If you don't qualify, then you don't grow further. And I said, at the World Cup, we will jump 5 levels and the future is open ahead for everybody.
Be honest. When you took the job, did you think World Cup qualification would have happened in the first cycle?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. It's on paper. I said the European Championship would probably be too early, which showed we were by far the better team. We were the one, Ukraine could not get out of the half in the final game against them. We only needed a draw, but with an own goal from 30 yards out. Mm. We lost with missing a penalty. Mm. And in the dressing room, after the Ukraine game, I said, we are going to qualify for the World Cup. Whoever we draw, it would be nice if it's a good draw, but whoever we draw, we are going to the playoffs, and then with the playoffs, we go to the World Cup.
Where does that qualification rank in your career achievements?
Well, in the top, it's together with qualifying with the Netherlands for the first time for finals and then going to the semifinals. Mm. South Africa qualifying in the mouth of the lion, Equatorial Guinea, for the Rio Olympics 2016, and then playing also exactly like Ireland, every game better and better and better. And those are the 3 highlights of my career.
What was it like between you and the players at the time? Because we know what has happened since, and we know you've left the job. So I'm trying to get a sense of what things were like for you in the FAI at that time. It would have been unthinkable, surely, on that night to think, I'm not going to get a new contract.
The bond was deep. It was a deep bond.
It looked like that from the outside.
Yeah, and it was. And I felt safe. I felt respected. Players were respected. We got the sponsoring of Sky that has everything to do with what we emitted and the bond we showed with each other and the way that we every single activity wanted to grow and go up the ranks. And it was just a vibrant atmosphere.
Within a few weeks of that qualification being achieved, the findings of the joint investigation in America were published. The NWSL and the Players Association looked into allegations of mistreatment of players and misconduct by coaches. And your name appeared in that. I think that the behaviour they linked you with was weight shaming or speaking about players' bodies or their appearance. I know you completely reject all of that. But when you first read that report, what was going through your head? What impact did it have on you?
I was... destroyed, because I think everybody knows my background, having experienced rape, sexual assaults, intimidation, isolation, framing, everything, power abuse of power over a long period of time as in a relation to the rape moment, and you're then put on the same page. Yeah. About body shaming, something that I'm the opposite of doing. When I'm getting to a team, the scale, the weight scale is going out of the dressing room. I don't want it because I don't care how much a player weighs or what the fat percentage of a player is. I care about how she executes her tasks within teamwork on the pitch. And everybody who worked with me and everybody that knows me knows that I'm extreme, very extreme in that. I do not get all that nonsense. Unless the medical team finds an issue somewhere, and then they deal with it. And only in my whole career, it was 2 times that the medical team asked me to be with a talk or asked me to do a talk. for two different reasons. With a player, that's a long time ago. It was not in Houston, it was a long time ago back in the Netherlands. And that was in a very, very respectful way to help the player and not to blame the player. But I heard, because I couldn't read the report. I still have not read it.
Even to this day, you've not read the whole report?
No, I cannot. I can't. That is too traumatic for me. And I've asked what is in it. And during the time, I was told the key things. And during the time, I thought, what do people think what they do to somebody? And that atmosphere, when that is coming over you, your life changes completely. I was just over the moment that I had to come out with my own story.
You would have publicly spoken about having been raped and sexually assaulted in the summer of 22.
Yeah.
And this would have happened within 6 months of that time frame.
Yeah, the 1st of July 2022.
Yeah. That's a lot for you to be dealing with in the space of 6 months.
Yeah, you know, if you go out, what usually people do anonymously, and they name their, how you say it?
Perpetrator.
Yeah. Then something is happening, like Mark Overmars' affair. If you say, I am brave enough to say what happened to me because my life needs to go back on track, and you don't name the one who did it, then you're outlawed. You're isolated. And I had the luck that I was already in Ireland. People knew me. So people stood up for me. But as soon as you go out, I'm not the first one. The theory is there. The research is there about it. Then your whole life, you're vulnerable. And you're vulnerable for accusations that have no ground. Because people bystanders find it more comfortable to attack you than to stand by you. Because when you stand by the person, that means you're against the ones that did it to her. And that means that you are put in that camp. And if you're put in that camp, you don't have a future anymore. And there's several colleagues of mine that stood by me and had no future anymore because of that. So at that moment, Ireland did not have the history, did not know who it was, had nothing to do with those people. And then there's the freedom to stand by you. Especially, I think, because the whole of Ireland was standing up for me. I was thrown into a warm bath of love by the Irish people. And that gave the courage to the FAI to support me. The players answered on that. They supported me also. And the one who was the most outspoken was Louise Quinn. And that helped me so much. She gave me such a support. I had done everything. I put lawyers in to not get it out in the press before the Georgia game. We had to play in the summer of 2022 against Georgia, completely out of league. So it was very difficult in all circumstances. And it was put after that. And she felt that showed that for me, the team always came first and the health of the players always came first, which is true. And which is why I put so much energy in it with the best lawyer in the Netherlands to get it pulled over the game. Mm. But then you need to recover from it. And the warmth of Ireland and the people and the team and the staff and at that moment also management helped me to stay on my feet and to face everything that I had to face.
The first time we met, I don't know if you remember this, we were both working as co-panelists on the Euros,
yeah.
I think at the time in RTE.
Yeah.
And I deliberately said to the producer, I said, I want to meet Vera when she's at the door. Because it was the week it was the week that you had made that statement publicly. And
yeah.
I don't know if you remember this.
Yes, I said I do,
to you,
of course.
I said to you, as you don't know me from Adam, but I would have done something similar. I put out a statement in my book a few years ago about sexual trauma from my early life, and it went really well for me. I was pleased with how I felt emotionally after it, with the reaction I got from others, and it was overall a positive experience. And I think I just wanted to share that with you at that time, because I assume in the middle of that week, there's just no way of knowing how it's all going to play out. Looking back now, is it a positive thing that you did to say that publicly? Any regrets about saying it publicly?
No, I have no regrets at all, because I had no choice. If I still would have had a choice, I wouldn't have done it. Okay. So I put my face up front, because that's the only way that it can stop. I could have done it anonymously, but I thought that would not help me, because it was not getting the perpetrators to court. For me, it was being able to breathe again and to live again. And that was that freedom I could never get without going out, because then it would have always stayed inside of me, and I would always have been treated in such a bad way by the people. So I do not regret what I was told. You will be destroyed by that lawyer, the best lawyer in these cases, Benedicte Fiek. And she said, are you prepared for that? I couldn't imagine what that meant. Halfway she said, well, you are so much stronger than I thought you were. I've never seen somebody dealing with this in this way. But I thought that would have been it. Not knowing that you're outlawed, and you stayed outlawed. And you're just a woman that everybody owns. That's actually what it is.
So having been through all of that, you're now named in a report, as you said, alongside others who were accused of really, really serious offences. Emotionally, what was going on for you at the time?
I didn't know how to live anymore. And I thought I can do two things, or I go to find help, or I kill myself.
That was a consideration?
It was not a consideration, but that was the only options. So I was not ready to kill myself. So I found help. And what for me was incredibly important is that my private life, I've got so much warmth around me. My husband, of course, Bert is now for 30 years my partner. And we are as much in love now as we were 30 years ago. And he stood by me on every single second. And he was the one actually that said, the moment that it had to go out, just do it, I'll be with you. Because when something, an article goes out like that, it's never what you wanted. It's never exactly the way you want it. So 5 minutes before I had to decide, I said, I'm not going to do it. And I was completely devastated. But he made me doing it because he knew this is the only way. This is the only way to live again for you. And then if they call it a reporter, it's not an investigation. It's just people that just anonymously throw something out. And it's the opposite of what I did. There's been so many things in that. It's the opposite. They said that I explode. I've never ever in my life exploded. Jonathan asked me when I said... that
this is Jonathan Hill, the CEO.
Yeah. I said I was almost exploding. He said, oh, Vera, how does it look like when you're exploding? With that tone. I said, well, never explode. Even then, I never explode. That was also a bit my problem. Maybe I should have exploded by times. But when that report came out, I also did not explode, but I kept it inside. So I couldn't sleep for now. What is it? It's now a year ago, in a year and a half ago. It's only last 2 weeks that I sleep. I could only sleep with sleeping pills. So the impact, people do not realize what it is when they do something like that. The impact is so big on the person, because you isolate the person, even though people say they support you, you have to do it on your own. And my lifeline was the love and the warmth around me. It was just a separation between football and my private life. But then Ireland became also a safe haven at that point. So I felt okay when I was going over the street, and I knew that people would not approach me as an abuser. But internationally, nobody asked themselves, wait a minute, maybe we need to ask Vera for once. That report is ridiculous. And the ones who are just coaching, just making coaching remarks, are now put next to sexual attackers.
What conversation did you have with, you mentioned Jonathan Hill, or others within the FAI? Were they supportive? Were they inquisitive about details? Were they asking you to explain yourself? What was their reaction when they read that?
Well, of course they had, and I would not have wondered it anything else. Of course they had to ask me, because if it's true, then you need to have another talk. But I was accused of so many things that they just invented. Like, I was checking their apartments. The truth is that Amber Brooks asked me to check her apartment because I might could take it over from her. She was leaving. And because my apartment was so incredibly noisy, and she had my apartment the year before, so she knew how difficult it was. So she invited me to have a look. And I did not do it because from her apartment you could look in the barbecue area, so I would see players partying, so I didn't do it. And I don't know who brought this in, but this is what happened. And if somebody is then using something like that to turn it around, that I am checking apartments, that is deliberate. That's just deliberate changing the truth. And so there are many examples that's in it that's just completely the opposite. And yeah, the people do not realize what they do. Why do they destroy people? And I think that is the main reason why I do this podcast, because it's now these days happening all over and all the time with social media. People are accused of things, and then you're in the position that where smoke is fire, so you are wrong. And that is, that's something that people need to realize. And therefore, I talk so openly. People need to know what they do to you.
In early July of last year, the start of the month before the World Cup, The Athletic published an article, this time citing numerous sources, all anonymous, with a lot more conversation and allegations about you and how you go about doing your job. And I think the headline of the article kind of posed this kind of question, like, are you just a woman being direct, or are you abusive and belittling of players? Me and you have spoken since then, and I think you used the phrase that everything changed after that.
Yeah.
Why do you say that? How did everything change after that article came out?
Well, I got the phone call. I was accused to pick up contact with them to again discuss this, which is not true. I got a questionnaire to fill in about me former as a player and how bad coaches were to you. And I said, well, is it not time to think about safeguarding the coach because of what happened there? That's the only thing I asked them. And then they came back like, we have done our own investigation. And they came back with things that if that really would have happened, would they not have said it to the reporter, to the report? Then it would have been published there, because the things that were named in the report were just too soft. So they thought, I need to do something different. I need to do something worse because she's not on the floor. So we need to get her on the floor. So now it was said that I was grabbing somebody by the throat, whereas this assistant, she jumped up to attack somebody and I stopped her from attacking somebody. Not by grabbing her by the throat. I just stopped her from attacking somebody. Like, I stopped her from attacking the referee when she jumped up the bench starting to shout. And I said, in my team, nobody is abusing the referee. Sit down. nobody is abusing the referee. And she said, well, if you don't abuse the referee, they do it and we get the referee against. This is USA. And I said, not in my team. I don't care. Not in my team. The referee is always right. Point. And that's also how I behave towards referee. We all have our job, and I presume that they do the best they can. But now I'm accused of grabbing her and pulling her on her collar and whatever.
And creating a culture of fear. That was one of the terms used.
Yeah. Well, if anyone did it, it was those players shouting all over the pitch, you have to fix up such and such. So I went to her after the game and I said, listen, in my team, nobody's doing that. We respect each other. I don't care at what point on the ladder they are. If they're low or high in the hierarchy, you just don't do that. And she said, okay, yeah, what do you want me to do? And I said, that's up to you. I just tell you that I find it unacceptable to do that to your teammate. So I left. I was calm. I did not swear. I did not shout. I just told her, I find it unacceptable. This player later came to me and she said, Vera, I want you to know that such and such has offered her apologies and that it will not happen again. That is what happened. And now I'm bringing in a fear culture. A fear culture. Nobody can say that about me. Everybody can always talk to me. And I know that it's by times difficult. So I always say, I understand it's difficult. If you want to talk, just tell me. There will always be somebody else in that talk. And, well, there's no player. And if I put on the list who came to me just for a general talk or a private talk, or it's just flawless.
So these allegations are not only baseless or inaccurate, they're false. You think they're partly motivated by malicious intent.
Yeah.
But it got a lot of coverage.
Yeah.
And you were a coach going to World Cup finals.
Yeah.
And it really started to dominate press conferences. I remember the one before the France game. It was so much about you. Yeah. And there was very little room for football.
The problem was that Jonathan Hill had meetings with players. And I've said that before, so it's nothing new. I asked him, please don't do it, because it undermines my authority.
Was he having meetings about this article?
Yeah.
And this general topic?
This article, yeah.
Okay.
So safeguarding was the issue. He had meetings with different staff members and different players.
Were you aware of the meetings, or did you hear afterwards?
He had done already a few, and I heard after of more. And I said, I ask you not to do it, Jonathan. He said, I have the right as CEO to talk and to have meetings. And I said, you have? Of course you have. But I ask you not to do it, because it undermines your authority. In 2 days' time, we go to a World Cup, and I need to have my hands free. But he didn't. He had meetings with players, and then not with all the players, or not when I was there, and not in relation with me, but separately. And in those meetings, it was discussed as if I was not thinking about the World Cup, and they had supported me so much, so why did I need this? Well, because there's things said about me that are criminal offenses, right? Attacking somebody, grabbing by the throat. I never in my whole life I've been physical aggressive to anyone in my whole life, even if as a kid.
So just so I understand you properly, these meetings between the CEO and some players or staff were partly critical of you for spending too much time talking about you and your situation, whereas you should have been focused more on team affairs? Was that the...
No, to bring in issues.
Okay.
And I said, Jonathan, as long as you have me, you see now what's happening. People around will always try to go back to that until I die. And even if I die, the first thing that people will say about me is about these allegations. Because I challenge the journalist not to write that. Because if he or she not writes it, the editor will demand to write it. I said, "Sir, I have to defend myself. I cannot just sit back." And he said, "Why not?" And I said, "Because then these allegations are what people know. If I do not answer, now people know at least that I've answered on it. And that it's not true and it's false. And it's also from just bad intentions from the people who say that."
Did you start to notice people were treating you differently to your face?
Yeah, immediately.
Within the FAI?
Yeah, in the sense of undermining my authority. So suddenly all things happened around me without discussing, without having the team performance in mind. So it was more important that we would look right than that we would perform right. And that's a shame. And I think it's out of inexperience, yeah? I'm not even thinking it's malicious. I'm thinking it's just not good management of the situation. So from that moment on, everybody was doing their own thing. For example, we had for half a year, when we were planning every single detail, it was okay for the management to be in the hotel, but they will eat separately from the team, which is very normal, nothing special. Because, well, you know, mm-hmm. at dinner time, at lunchtime, that's the moment that you can say a few things, like unofficially, just in between, just to keep the team together and remind them of things. From the very first moment, nobody respected me. Everybody came in whenever they felt like, making noise whenever they felt like, coming in with other clothes. So if management does that, then why would the players do differently? So there was this moment that I came in and there were two players, one in Adidas and one in Puma.
The rule at the time, you were contractually tied with Castore, particular kit supplier.
Yeah.
And so here were two players wearing something
one
else.
One Adidas and one Puma. So I was a bit late, a few minutes late. I had a call with another coach. And I said, "I'm a few minutes late." So I went to the staff table and I said, "Did anyone say something?" "No, leave them because the tension is already too big." I said, "We have contractual obligations. Did anyone say something?" "No." So I had to say something. Now, I went to the players, very calm. All managers were sitting there, so I couldn't do things in general because who are you to say that? Look, So very calm in between the players, and I said, "Guys, you know you cannot sit here with Adidas and Puma. You have to wear Castore." And the reaction was, "Does it need to be that like this? Why do you say it like this?" And I said, "I'm very calm. Nobody hears it. I could have done it differently. You need to wear Castore." And that is just one example from a constant provocating and trying. There was this moment that it was. I felt it was trying to let me explode. That's why I said earlier but I don't explode. I pull back. I pull back out of the situation. That is my nature.
So this is a general kind of wave of people, as you saw it, undermining you or disrespecting you or ignoring your methods or the rules that had been in place.
Probably you weren't even conscious of it, eh?
Okay.
It's a process that people some were conscious and others were going with the flow. There was a moment that I said to a player, "Listen, I know that I get the blame for everything. Even the sheets that were pulling tight, I got the blame for because that should have been arranged. Can you imagine?" Mm. So I said that to a player and she said, "You're actually right. Yeah." I said, "It needs to stop." And she said, "I'll say something about it." So for 2 days, it was a bit better. But then coming on the pitch with the wrong socks or no socks or things like that, constantly.
The way you describe it sounds like a spell where you're a coach that is losing or has lost that really important sense of authority or control within a dressing room.
No,
for lots of reasons, and
no,
maybe it was unconscious.
It's not losing because I think deep down inside the respect was there.
Okay.
But what I think it is, No, let's not say that. Okay. No, let's not say that.
Okay. Surely there was something. I know you're describing really well what the environment was like, what the atmosphere was like, and some of the underlying issues. Surely some bits were enjoyable.
It was special. It was special to be there. It was special to coach at the World Cup because of the magnitude. But I remember before the first game, we could see the stadium for 20 minutes. And we all left and I went back on my own and going to the pitch. And I looked around and I thought, Vera, this is for yourself. You've done everything, always your whole life for others. This is for yourself that you stand here, that you didn't step out. So do the best you can. Make sure they play their best game ever. And do that simple, because they cannot grasp more than the simple things. So it must be extremely accurate, short, and make sure they play as a team within the capacities that they have. And that's what I did.
So no moments of joy or celebration or throughout the 10 days that you played matches?
My husband was there with a friend. That was fantastic. So that I could get off steam. That I could, when everybody was away, I could go away. I enjoyed my runs with the doctor in the morning. And I especially enjoyed the fans. I enjoyed what people did for us to come to the other side of the world. Or the people lived there, leaving their homes and now feeling home with us. That is something that I will never forget. The homecoming was fantastic. But it took energy out of me to be able to function, let's say it like that, to be able to function, yeah. And within that, of course, we had moments that we laughed and we had moments that we had a coffee. But the vibe that I had in Scotland, no, that has never been there.
Wow. Because your position and your future and your contract situation started to become a topic that was almost daily reported on. And I was one of the pundits in RTE covering the tournament, and it would always be one of the talking points before our show. Do we talk about Vera today? Do we talk about the contract? Is there anything to say? But one of the things that we picked up on that was noticeable was that every single player that was asked what their view was, every single one of them swerved to giving it an opinion. They all stuck to the line of, we're just players, we're here to play football, it's nothing to do with us. And I started to be really interested by that and said, there's a pattern here. They're all given the same answer. They're not really answering it. Like, what's going on here? And I started to interpret that as, there's a shift here. There doesn't seem to be anyone willing to publicly support Vera from within the dressing room.
So how is that possible?
You tell me.
Well, I'll just try to tell. I'll just try to tell. If the key persons are sick and tired of the issues and don't want to deal with it, then you are gone. And I said, that is something that I cannot help. I've been myself always, and I've made sure that they played their best games ever. I've written every single player a positive letter, also the reserves, also the ones who did not travel. And I got responses after the first day of the first camp, and they all said the same thing. So if you talk about a fear culture, then I'm wondering what is happening there, if they cannot, because I know that players respect me. I know.
So they all waited for the same time to reply, and they all replied in the same way.
Yeah, it's either, I will never forget that you brought us to the World Cup, or I will never forget you gave me my first cap.
So it was either bizarre coincidence or very specifically coordinated.
Well, let's keep it with bizarre coincidence.
Okay. Did you go to that World Cup knowing your time was up with the FAI?
Yes.
What made you think that? Was there anything specific?
Because of the way Jonathan Hill was treating the situation. Talking with players, meeting with players, meeting with a training player, not with the other training player. Instigating an atmosphere there as if that is not part of top sport.
This is the examples you refer to in the statement that you released when you left. You refer to interference from executives in team affairs. Yeah. Jonathan Hill has come out and said that that is false, that that did not happen.
Well, what else do you think that he would say?
The director of football, Mark Canham, was the one who conducted a review of the tournament. And they were going to delay making a public decision on your future until after that review had been completed. You have since said that you felt the process was flawed and the outcome was predetermined. What was flawed about the process?
If you announce a review, you start in Australia with it. You then come home and you keep going. You first have an interview with the assistant, then an interview with the communication manager. And then because I notice and I say, are you going to talk with me? Then with me. And there's been things put on the table before he understands and knows what the idea was. And then saying when I said, this staff member has said the opposite, because he came to me telling me what he has said. He said, yeah, but that doesn't count because he's a friend. And I said, he's a friend? He's the one who went to different World Cups and different European Cups, Olympic Games. A friend, he's the most honest person and he's the one who kicks my butt when I needed it. And he said, well, it doesn't count. And I've asked for what has been presented to the board. I have the right to see that. It's never been sent. If I have the decision that's been communicated for half a year, then we do exactly the same we always did. So the moment of the presentation of the team, the moment of the presentation of the opponent, when defending, when attacking, and we keep exactly the same. Why does Jonathan throw on the table, Vera, the players did their own scouting. They get the team, the game themselves. I said, yeah, that's what we agreed. Yeah, they can find it on Huddle. But I don't want to overload. The art is to keep things simple, to get players exactly right, because all the other stuff is known. It's about details, and I do not put that on their plates because of not increasing the intention. But that was seen as if I did not do my homework. Whereas I worked my butt off and every single detail was planned.
Did you get an opportunity at the end of the World Cup? Often at the end of tournaments, there's an evening celebration, there's team meetings, there's presentations, there's speeches, there's something to mark the achievement, to say what needs to be said, and then everyone leaves. How did the World Cup experience end for you and the players?
We had also that. We had planned it, of course. We would have a gathering with the team only, without anyone else, after the last dinner, after the last game. And the next morning, we would have a closure. So I got a text message, like so many times. Vera, we don't want that closure. We want it tonight.
From a player?
And I said, well, it's planned already for weeks. It's tomorrow. And then I got a text message from a staff member. They want to get the boat at 10 o'clock. I said, okay, I'm prepared to move it. We get it to 9 o'clock. We want it tonight. We don't want it tomorrow. And at that point, I was just so finished. So I said, then we do it tonight after dinner. I did not even have my food on my plate. And the player shouted, can we do this thing? Literally, can we do this thing now? I said, can I have my dinner, please? And then I haven't finished my dinner because it was in the attitude like, what are we waiting for? So there was the presentation of the certificate and everybody got a ball from the World Cup to the players. And then, staff need to be thanked. So Katie stood up and thanked the staff. And then he said, can we leave now? I said, excuse me, the staff needs to get their certification too. Well, we don't want that. And they left. And we had a gathering with only the players. So we did it with the staff. And you can imagine how I felt at that moment. I couldn't be bothered anymore. So we went to the place. The hotel offered us the top roof to sit together with the players to have a drink, and then they could go out with their families. And we had a family gathering 2 days earlier, so that was perfectly planned. And we come up, and I go there with a medical staff member, and the elevator opens. I was in Castor, and there's about 200 people there. And I ask around, and nobody of the staff members knew that there was 200 people there. We would be with just the team. Friends, family, former players, current players, everybody. And I was just asking, do you know this? Because that it was planned that we would finish after the World Cup. It was clearly that was not what it had to be. Mm-hmm. So we flew back, the second group flew back, and then we had still these members, the coin to hand out. So we did that after the lunch when everybody was back. We went to the celebration. Then after the celebration, the bus had to stop because the players wanted to change, and they just left. They changed on the bus. Everybody had to wait for 20 minutes, and they just left to go out without any decency. So that was it, and I flew home.
In Katie's speech when she thanked the staff, did she mention you?
Not specifically.
Really? How did you feel about that?
I felt it, but I felt so much already during the tournament. It's clear.
What was also clear was what Diane called.
But the thing is, I've spent two times an hour on the phone with her after.
Okay.
And then she perfectly realized what she did, and probably that is why she had a positive interview at the first camp after.
So you've had lengthy conversations, and you've said a lot.
And that was and that was positive. We just said to each other what we thought.
Okay.
And she never mentioned anything like that things were not okay.
Another player who had a lot to say, Diane Caldwell, before the opening game of the Nations League in September. You weren't long gone from the job at this point. And she was asked about your role and how she felt about your time in charge. And she said that what was achieved by the players in terms of performances and results were achieved in spite of you.
I've heard that, yeah.
That must have been hurtful.
Yeah, but you know what is most hurtful? Diane Caldwell is a player that she wanted to leave Germany. So I helped her. I got a phone call from a coach from the NWSL. Nobody could know. Our video analyst was on the break. So I made a video clip for her with exactly the moments that this coach was looking for. And she got a contract. She started there, came on the bench. I asked her how she felt about it. She was aggressive because how could I say that she was on the bench? Because she wasn't, whereas she was. And I just wanted to have empathy for her. Then she left the club and she went to Manchester City. They looked for a central defender, so perfectly. But after three games, also predominantly on the bench. So she went to Reading, same issue. And then she went to FC Zurich, and again on the bench. Where in men's football would a player that is given the opportunity, who's played only so few minutes, to go to the World Cup and be part of it. in our conversations, all the other technical staff members wanted to put her on the table as a discussion point. And I have said, Diane Caldwell is not a discussion point, because Nifae had a calf injury. She still is dealing with it. With us, she played all the games. And I said, if she falls out, who do you trust more? Somebody with almost 100 caps. And we tested her against USA. There was a penalty kick against, but other than that, it was reasonable. Okay. So then I would choose for the one with the experience. So Diane Caldwell is not on the table. So I protected her in all sense. She hardly played. She wasn't on the table as discussion point. And she does this to me. And made sure that she could enter the pitch at the end of the last game. And she probably had her mind set that she would play her 100th cap at the World Cup or something. Whereas before, I have discussed when Jonathan Hill was saying that he was having meetings during the preparation period of half year with players. And I said, and I've literally said to him, please do not have a meeting with Diane Caldwell, because I'm trying to keep her in the squad. And she needs to realize her role. And the fact is that staff members, plural, came to me in November last year to say, if Diane is not playing, you need to consider bringing her because of her attitude. And I said, well, we will manage. I think she's worth it. She deserves it to be here. So I asked Jonathan Hill to not put her on a platform, because I was trying to get her getting used to the role that she would have at the World Cup. And we had meetings, we had video calls and so on for her. So it was absolutely clear which role she would play. And then coming out with this, whereas we have planned every single detail.
How would you have reacted if a player in your squad spoke about your predecessor in that way to the media?
I would have said, you can go up to your room, pack your bag and leave the camp.
You would have sent them home?
Yeah.
Are you disappointed with Eileen Gleeson's role?
I'm disappointed because 2 weeks earlier we said nothing comes between us. I said, we love each other, we spoke it out, nothing comes between us. And the first thing she says is, Diane has the right to say things because everybody can have an open opinion and everybody can share their opinion. But this is not a true opinion. This is, how do you say that?
You feel it was motivated in some way by disappointment that she wasn't playing herself?
Probably. I don't know.
Because she went through pretty much every aspect of the role of a coach and said in all of those areas under your time, they could have all been improved. They were below. She gave you the worst job appraisal I've ever heard a player give of their coach on record.
Why would somebody do that if you go to a World Cup as a very small nation, if you have astonished the world, the football world? And last week, I still got the compliments. How on earth did you do that? Really, those words. If I plan the success, controlling the steps that we make and the steps that we have to make and what we have to be, how to be ready and playing those games, that is not up to player to judge that. Because we played our best games. We played far above the level that anyone ever expected from us. So what do you want? What do you want? And there's no team that started the World Cup like we did. All the other debutants, but also the big teams, had problem. They had to grow into the tournament. We were there immediately. Well, how? That is not because of a coach who's not doing anything.
Were you angry when she said it? Or were you at this point going, look, I was angry.
I'm expecting it at this point. I was probably everything that she wanted me to feel. I had two sides. One side, I felt sorry for her that she needed this. And on the other side, everybody sees this. 5 times I became coach of the year. There was no election that I did not become coach of the year. Do you think that is because of whatever, my nice glasses or something. That is because everybody is astonished what we achieved in the way we achieved it, in the power that we go on. Do you think that a debutant will have no injuries at all at the end of the tournament if you don't plan, if you don't know what you're doing?
So when you left at the end of August, when Diane said what she said in September, and the World Cup had finished the previous 6 weeks, that's only 8 or 9 months after the night we were speaking about early in Glasgow, when everything was as good as it can possibly be. Over the winter, how have you been? Because we haven't really heard from you publicly. You haven't spoken about any of this, and you haven't been appointed in any job since. How have you been?
Well, not so well. That's clear. I am in a very intense therapy to find the reason of and enjoyment of life again. Because if people do this to you, and you've spent your whole life with all your passion to get every time again the best for players, because this is not the only project that went like this. Eh? The Netherlands also. In Scotland, the first also. In South Africa, don't forget that, what happened there. People from all the other countries, the players, are so close to me. So how can this happen? It is because I'm outlawed. And it goes back, and experts have helped me to figure that it really goes back to the rape in 30 years ago. Because everybody thinks they can do with you what they want because it has no consequences. And it shows because she's portrayed as the hero instead of the one that did something that is just unheard of. And I think that the key issue is that narcissism in the women's game is becoming so big that nobody cares about the coach, especially not the female coach, unless the coach can do whatever she wants, just structuring, or he structuring, because it's the best team in the world, it's the best players. But the players who need to develop need to understand that there's also players who will not be part of it, because that is part of top sport. And I just cannot grasp it. So that is the key thing, that I'm deliberately hurt so much. And why do people do that? Why do they harm me? Because everything that happened would not have happened without me.
Has the therapy been effective, helpful?
Still in the middle of the process. It's been extended. I have, severe trauma therapy. And that, of course, has also go back to my experience in my youth. But that was done in a previous phase, and now it's about how to deal and can accept that there's difficulties for me to be part of football. That is something that goes so deep down inside. It has nothing to do with not coaching Ireland anymore. It has to do with destroying of somebody who has given her all with all the quality and has shown now for the fourth time that this method works. How can she say, how can Diane Caldwell say that it's without plan? I mean, planning success. I knew when I signed that we would be here at the World Cup. That is what planning is. Not to look after and plan your own future by kicking the coach before you because you haven't played that much.
Can you see yourself taking charge of an elite team anytime soon?
The issue is, in the Western world, nobody will appoint me. Not because they believe them, because in football people know me, but because they don't want the issues around it. So they don't. If they appoint me, they immediately get questions. And that is why I will never be appointed in the Western world.
Do you think you're now unemployable?
In the Western world, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've noticed that already for several times. And you can even think it's logical, because if you as a nation wants to have positive impact with women's football, you don't want to start with issues, right? That you better take somebody with less credentials, but then you can start from an empty sheet. And that's what it is. And everybody says, oh, no, you with your CV, no, you will get, yeah, be realistic. I know what it is. I know what it is. And that is what my lawyer meant with, you will be destroyed, Vera.
Well, Vera, we've taken up loads of your time this afternoon. I'm really, really appreciative that you invited us into your home and you spoke.
Can I add one thing, please?
Go for it.
Because I've received so many messages from the people in Ireland and still, I got a message 2 weeks ago from a mother who said, we were talking about a World Cup here. My little daughter of 10 years old says, Mum, I miss Vera so much. That warms me so much. And I got on a very regular basis messages like that of a little kid gets closer to me, but all like, I hope you're well, I hope you're doing well. We believe in you. Don't think that that is what we think. And I think that that is something that helps me. In my private environment, it goes really, really better. People notice the difference. The outcome of the therapy gives me from deep depression, high anxiety. It was said now that the figures were so high that people who are hospitalized with mental issues had lower rates than I had when I started the therapy. And now it's completely the opposite. It gives hope for future. And especially hope for enjoyment, that I feel that life is offering me again the sunshine not only of France, but the sunshine in general. And somehow I will find my way. But I hope that the ones involved are going to look in the mirror, looking at themselves and think, is this the person, is this really the person that I want to be? And they can always come to me with an open mind. And I hope that there will be a moment that I will have friends again in Ireland. And Katie McCabe said, Vera, please don't be a stranger after my second talk. I said, well, Katie, I hope that I can be not a stranger, because now I feel, at this moment, I feel a stranger of the team.
Thank you very much for talking to us, and I really do wish you well with the ongoing therapy and your own recovery from everything you've been through and trying to make sense of it all.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for coming to France.
When do we land in?
12.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been welcome aboard the Ryanair Flight FR 640 departing Dublin. If you Dublin not your destination, please
So as I said at the top of the show, we are in Dublin, so we've had a week to reflect on that chat. I think it's remarkable that someone who coached the team as recently as the World Cup last summer genuinely believes they're unemployable on this side of the world. And particularly, and I suppose this is the key point, this is the central point, she is so adamant, she is so clear that the allegations made about her coaching and about her management of players are completely baseless.
Yeah, and on that, Rich, like whether that will actually be Vera's experience, I don't know. But one thing that came across clearly from the chat was her absolute belief in her own abilities and her approach to the job. I suppose that's probably a trait that she would share with a lot of high-achieving people. And yeah, maybe they're high-achieving partly because of that exact trait. But, you know, I did very much pick up on a noticeable lack of self-doubt or questioning of how she went about her job, or any regret about how she approached the job, even after the internal review from the FAI. So that really kind of stood out to me.
Yeah, and just to finish up by stating the blindingly obvious here, like what we heard there was Vera's version of events about her time in Ireland. Now, I'm sure there are other accounts, maybe from players, maybe from staff involved, who knows, that would vary wildly from the one we just heard. But I'm very, very grateful that Vera did feel so comfortable to speak to us in the way that she did. Right, we will leave it there for this one. We are back next week with the second show of the series.
days and will be heading to a slightly less glamorous but nonetheless still beautiful destination of County Wicklow. So it's a little closer to home, and I'll be speaking to a really special guest who has an extraordinary story to share with us. Thanks, Gillian.
Thanks, Rich.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. Episode is a Second Captains production and is part of the Acast Creator Network.
That's the second time he's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captains.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.